You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Former U.S. Vice President Al Gore made a video on climate change and titled it "An Inconvenient Truth." Climate change is real, was Gore's inconvenient truth. Joel Covell made a video in response. He titled it "A Really Inconvenient Truth." The addition of the word "really" represents Covell's conviction that the structures of capitalism are at the root of impending catastrophe of climate change. To discuss the interconnection of capitalism and climate change, we contacted Joel Covell in New York State. Joel Covell is an academic, an author, and a political activist, and among his many books is Enemy of Nature, End of Capitalism, or End of the World. Welcome to Red Eye, Joel.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mordecai.
The debate about the reality of climate change effectively has ended, but the debate over what to do to prevent total ecological catastrophe remains quite intense. And, for example, you once thought that the Kyoto Accord was a first step, but you later came to consider it a wrong and a dangerous step.
Yes, I do. I was... you know, a bit naive then. Many people were. That was 1997. Although what it did do was prod me into a quixotic political activity to become the New York senator on the Green Party, because the U.S. Senate, even though what turned out to be a wrong step, was going to do nothing about it, and it seemed to me, that is to say, to ratify Kyoto, which is a treaty obligation. And, you know, it just seemed to me that that was unconscionable, so I, and it still is, but, so, you know, so I went to bat for the, you know, U.S. Senate seat in New York State in 1998, and needless to say, without any hopes of being the next senator, who was Charles Schumer, unfortunately for us all. And, but, you know, the point being that we need to, you know, take a much more active and vigorous, you know, politically informed stance on these things. We cannot allow the authorities to run this stuff. So in the course of it, I was kind of giving Kyoto protocols themselves a free pass. But the more I studied it and the more other people's work impressed itself on me, I realized that it was not just the first step, it was the wrong step. And, you know, the big point to be made about this is that there's a very small window for correcting that direction, and a very momentous event coming up at the end of this year, which unfortunately not that many people recognize, namely the birthplace of the son of Kyoto, which will be in Copenhagen, Denmark, in December, and is a really critical coming together of climate activists all around the world. I mean, I don't think there's a great deal of unanimity on it. The problem with all this is that it really is brutally difficult to think your way through it. But at least we need the clarity to say that the problem is that it should be laid at the feet of the capitalist system, and that one thing that's sort of prima facie wrong is to turn the regulation of climate change over to the very economic and political forces that created the problem of climate change. I think that's a classic, you know, letting the fox run the hen house kind of situation. And, you know, at the very least, we've got to fight against that. It's not at all clear what the best path out, but it is clear what the worst path out is, namely the path that got us into it.
What is it about the fundamental economic structures of capitalism that necessarily result in ecological disaster?
You know, I think people intuitively and even explicitly recognize this, but the implication is awesome and stifles the mind. It freezes them in their tracks, so to speak. It's very simple. It's that the capitalist system cannot but expand. I mean, it's by definition, by internal mechanism, a non-equilibrium system that regulates itself not on according to what's good for humanity or good for nature, but only on the profits that are made. And that's the law of accumulation. Our friend Karl Marx, he put it very bluntly in his masterwork, Das Kapital. He said, you know, accumulation, that is Moses and the prophets to the capitalists. In other words, there's kind of a fundamentalist belief in the capitalist, within the capitalist system, that you must continue to accumulate capital. Now, the reason of that belief is not that hard to figure out, but at least, and in any event, you can see what's happening when the world goes through a situation such as we're in now, where capital is in fact not accumulating, and it's, you know, it's widely perceived as a terrible disaster. And of course, within the capitalist system, if capital is not accumulating, it means, you know, terrible hardships for great masses of people around the world. And I think every person I know is quite sentient about this. It's clearly, if you're George Soros or somebody and knows how to make money on speculation, even in downward turns, you're okay, but that's a minuscule proportion of the population, and everybody else is suffering or seized by anxiety. We all feel that, so we must recognize the strength and power of the capitalist system to control our minds and our emotions. That, you know, we can say, well, how we're not growing. The economy isn't growing. The economy must keep growing, but very few people step back and say, wait a second. The economy shouldn't be growing, because if it is growing without limit, then it's quite bluntly, just by sheer logic, the death knell of the human species. Really, you know, the idea that that humanity can't do better than create an economic system predicated on endless growth is, to me, an absolute abomination.
What about the
reigning idea?
What about the aspect as well that everything becomes a commodity, so for sale and for profit? So water, air, etc.
Sure. That's just focusing down on it a little bit. Of course, the ecological economics within the capitalist system say, well, the best way to handle this is to commodify every part of nature, but they never come to grips with the question of the growth. The point about the growth is, yes, you must convert everything into a commodity, and every commodity has some, you know, basis in nature. Of course, not all commodities are immediately eco-destructive, but the framework of building a world out of constantly expanding commodity production is strictly speaking ecologically destructive. And so, I mean, you just have to visit a Walmart. You have Walmart equivalent in Vancouver, right?
Yeah, we've tried not to, but they're here.
They're here. I mean, they're there, and the reason they're there is because they have this tremendous force behind them. And as you go to the Walmart, inside the Walmart, what will you see? You'll see a sickening array of, you know, it's the most depressing thing in the world, really. There's millions and millions of commodities, or hundreds of thousands of different products there, a vast majority of them completely useless or harmful, and or at least in some portion of their being. And they're headed for the waste dump. That's the true reality of capitalism, is to produce without end and to have no internal check on the production. Production is not for use. It's not for, you know, what's proper or beautiful or humanly necessary. It's for making money. If you're making money, well, there are a lot of laws of capitalism which we could go into if we had a lot of time, but, you know, briefly, the simplest way of saying it is that, first of all, because there's endless competition between capitalists, right? They all, it's private ownership of the means of production. That means a bunch of individuals or small capitals or big capitals confront one another as implacably hostile. So they're each trying to destroy the other, because they know if they make less money than the other one will buy them out, etc. So they must continually increase their profitability. One way they increase their profitability is putting in more machinery at the point of production, so they have to can pay their workers less, relatively speaking, and make products more efficiently. But if they put in machines, then they're making less profit on each commodity, so they have to make more commodities, and they have to introduce more needs to people, so that we have suddenly have to, you know, decide that your hair is the wrong color, or that your armpits don't smell properly, or there's something wrong with you, and you want to, you know, fill it in with this, you know, this new thing that you're going to buy, and it's going to complete your being. But of course, it never does. It just makes you more and more unhappy and dissatisfied and addicted. This is an addictive society, which is the subjective base of all this endless expansion. But it's perfectly plain, it should be, to any sensible man or woman, that you can't continue this way. First of all, you're going to run out of resources, which is in fact happening, and that's another problem. Second of all, you're going to create endless pollution, because these commodities are not made for safety, or they're just made for sale, and you know, like, they have to have a long shelf life and be able to be shipped around the world. So you have to put dye stuffs in them, so the dyes won't fade. Because if you use natural dyes, the natural dye will fade. But, you know, coal tar dyes won't. But coal tar dyes that happen to be carcinogenic, well, too bad, you know. Or you give the kitty this little chew toy that has, you know, naphthalene in it, or various, you know, horrible substances. But it's brightly colored, and the kid loves it, and he chews on it. So, you know, everybody is being suffused. By the way, the corollary to this, I know I'm speaking a little fast, Mordecai. I hope I'm not going too fast, but I get excited about this stuff, and I know we don't have a whole lot of time. I mean, the corollary to this is that we all have floating around in our bodies endless amounts of very, very bad substances, and you said yes. Climate change is the issue. Well, let's say it's the most important, the most dramatic issue, but it's by no means the only issue. That is to say, even if climate change weren't on the agenda, you would still have another whole set of dreadful, you know, consequences of capitalist overproduction and chaotic production, including, of course, pollution and the degradation of lived environments and all that, you know, but also including, which in some ways is just as great a problem as climate change, is you know, species loss of biodiversity. We're killing off more species than have happened in the last, than has not happened like this for 70 million years. And this, our own species is just doing this because of its insane addiction to growth and its refusal to, you know, turn production into needs that are harmonious with nature, rather than needs that are just going to generate more and more money for the capitalist class.
You're a co-author of a manifesto which outlines a vision called eco-socialism, a vision that generates some hope. At the same time, we have the speed of the ecological collapse, which generates panic and despair. How do you, or how can we, deal constructively with this tension between a hope of an alternative to the capitalist order and the despair of the of the disaster facing us?
Well, it's a tough one, but it's in a way not really that tough. I mean, we may not be able to solve this problem, but I think what gives people despair is passivity. It's being just helpless, or it's a kind of enforced ignorance that, you know, we're raised on. Because, you know, another corollary to all this is that we have a cultural system that will not permit critical inquiry into the roots of its own, you know, destructivity. And so we have endless amounts of greenwashing and propaganda and, you know, all the rest. And I think people despair insofar as they're kept ignorant, and fearfulness comes out of ignorance. So, the alternative is to move on a better path, and this may not get us out of this tremendous dilemma, but at least you have the feeling that, you know, as Pascal said, a thinking reed. I mean, you're not just being buffeted by the forces of the universe that are created now through human means, but that you yourself are thinking and more critically are organizing. I think that the other thing that makes people despair the most is feeling alone, feeling that they're isolated and estranged from everything. And the the secret of good organizing is to give people a sense of connection, give people a sense that you know, there are hopes in collective action, that there are folks all around the world who are responding. You know, existentially, we're all put on Earth for, you know, a limited span, and everybody obviously knows that. How well we appreciate it, it's another story, but we know that. So the question is just, what's the best way to live? And the, to me, the only answer to that question is a way to live that, that, you know, that deals with what's destroying life and tries to build a better world, not just for ourselves, but for our children, our children's children, all the children of the Earth, and the like. And I think, you know, if you get into that frame of mind, there's no real reason to despair. There's reason to feel sad or angry. But, you know, you're fighting. If you're, you know, if you're a fighter, if you're learning, if you're engaging, there's lots to be done. I mean, we have to organize, for instance. It's the old, you know, Mother Jones thing, you know, don't mourn, organize, right? Or was it Joe Hill who said that? But, you know, these are all sayings from the labor tradition, and they're very valid. You know, what are you going to sit around and wring your hands and say, oi, 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 or are you going to get out there and organize? And if you get out there and organize, then, you know, you know, we all go under at some point, but at least you'll go under, you know, fighting and in a, you know, collective action. So that manifesto that was written first by French intellectual Michel Levy and myself, called the Eco-Socialist Manifesto. We now have a new version called the Eco-Socialist Declaration. We have something called the Eco-Socialist International Network. We have a huge way to go with such a fledgling organization, but at least, you know, we're out there trying to make some inroads into this monstrous situation. People can read about it on ecosocialistnetwork.org, ecosocialistnetwork.org.
Well, and, you know, thanks for that, Joel, and it's a very appropriate ending for the day after May Day, so we'll keep in the May Day spirit.
Yeah, right, okay. Let's keep the fight.
Nice. All right. Bye-bye, Joel.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Joel Covell. He trained as a psychiatrist, taught psychiatry at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. He later taught anthropology and social sciences. Joel has written 9 books on a variety of topics, among them Enemy of Nature, End of Capitalism, or End of the World. He's also editor of the journal Capitalism, Nature, Socialism. And to find out more about Joel's work, you can go to the Red Eye website, where you'll find a link there. It's our website is cooperadio.org/redeye, and click on Current Show.